timing is so dangerous and it's so scary when you're doing these shots that involve a lot of things to work and happen at the same time.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
What's up, everyone? Mike here. Today's episode is part two of our interview with Vlad Rehberg. One portion of today's interview that I really enjoyed, Vlad talking about his time doing fight scenes for Netflix's hit show, Lucifer. He talks about specifically the art of how to use stunt doubles, especially for these epic fight scenes where two of the characters duking it out are being played by the same actor. It's a really cool listen, and I hope you enjoy.
Just kind of wondering, just starting off, I know Tom Ellis plays both Lucifer and Michael. Does this factor in when you're choreographing at all?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I love it.
Yeah.
I love challenges because deep down inside, I like to be a problem solver.
Mm.
I used to love math. I love math before it became English in AP Calculus BC. And that's why I hated math. But I've always been a problem solving type and I've loved that. So when I was presented with the Michael character and I found out that he's played by Tom Ellis, I was like, okay, wonderful. Now, when we prep the fight, we still have two doubles for the two actors, right? Which is the Michael actor and the Lucifer actor, even though they're played by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it came to designing the action sequences, I'm going to take you guys back to episode 3, season 5, episode 3, when Michael and Lucifer fought each other.
Mm-hmm.
When we had our meeting, there were, of course, talks about face replacements, split screen, and things like that. Now, again, this is where all the expertise and the experience comes into play. I went ahead and I designed the action sequences with minimum face replacement. And why is that a good thing? Because that means minimum VFX. And why is that a good thing? Minimum VFX means minimum cost of money. And why is that a good thing? Because producers don't want to spend that money. And why is that a good thing? Because then producers are going to like you. And why is that a good thing? Because then you'll build a relationship, which in turn will hopefully give you the opportunity to work with them again when they move on to other shows and projects. Also, VFX shots can be time consuming. So when we designed that Lucifer versus Michael fight, I had to keep in mind where my doubles were, where my actors were, meaning my one actor and where my one double is. And that's something that I started doing on Lucifer a while back. When I say a while back, I think maybe like 2006, 2007, Sam Hargrave and I were having a conversation. He's like, listen, you do great stuff, but you need to know how to shoot doubles. That's very, very important in our industry. And that rung true more so than ever when I was doing Lucifer. And the first season 3, the first season that I worked on, and then season 4 gave me the experience and the ability to know exactly where I'm placing a double and how to shoot a double. And how to shoot the way the network is going to shoot the show. Here's the thing for anybody listening. Just because you have a nice DSLR, right? You have to remember your camera weighs no more than 5 pounds. The cameras that professionals are operating with are going to have anywhere between a 25-pound weight to like a 60, 70-pound weight, depending on all the gear attached to it.
Yeah, they're huge, yeah.
So you have to keep that in mind. So the best thing to do is kind of going back to the Hong Kong ways of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Here's your shot. Make it happen. You can do shaky cam, but you got to be careful with the shaky cam.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful with the tilts. Like Vlad Rehberg, I love my tilts. You'll see that. There's always some kind of a Dutch angle. And at least in every single one of my shorts, there's a Dutch angle, period. Right? But I can't always have that play out because the director might not want that. Right? Unless I'm running the show, unless I'm the second unit, I can't dictate all the camera angles, but by having a solid previs, I can show everyone what it can look like with realistic camera angles. So season 3 and 4 gave me the practice to shoot doubles and to have real expectations as far as camera angles go. And then I took that and I got a new element in season 5. Here you have one actor who's playing two actors. I really had to work with the doubles and the camera angles and the kind of choreography that we would create.
Mm.
When we did that, again, everyone was extremely happy because, number one, we had two face replacement shots, which is the opening where Michael and Lucifer bang heads, hands, mm. I'm sorry. Lucifer gives the palm strike, which I kind of coined in season four, the hand of God. And Michael being the antagonist, you know, and the opposite of Lucifer, I gave him a fist, like a powerful fist versus a powerful open hand palm.
Yeah.
You know, two contrasting techniques. And we had to show, that's one of those things where it's like, we have to show the impact of that by having both characters on the screen. So we face replaced one of them. And then another face replacement shot was when Michael was getting his face sliced up by Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, it was an actor double, and we had a couple of split screens. Now, transitioning into episode 8, it got a little bit more unique because there's one shot where you see all of the actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see Maze, you see Lucifer, you see Amenadiel, and you see Michael. That was the most fun for me because it was the trickiest shot. So for that, I placed the two people that are in the very beginning of the scene, which were Maze and Lucifer, right? And I knew that Michael would have to be shown, so I have to be careful with how I show Lucifer, meaning I can only bring in the double. And what's the best way to hide the double is by showing their backs. You can't show their face. That's why I have the double.
Right.
So I have Maze wailing on Lucifer in the beginning. We will be able to see Maze's face, and that's great. She'll beat the crap out of Lucifer. Then in flies Michael, hitting the ground. That was a double. And as we then come up, we see Amenadiel come in, our actor. And now we're beginning to kind of turn around Amenadiel. Right?
Mm.
That one gives us an opportunity to switch out my Michael double with the actor double. So Tom Ellis was inside the little room. And when he heard the bang, he would run out because the camera's pointing up.
Wow.
He would run out and then stand up into frame like it was him, right? And the double would run out. So, sorry. Tom would run in and the double would run out.
Mm,
now, at the same time, you still have Maze and Lucifer fighting in the background.
Yeah.
So what happened was, as we're focusing on the Amenadiel, as we're walking towards him and then beginning to turn the camera around, I had Maze and Lucifer switch positions. So now Lucifer's back is to us again. So essentially, she had him in a Muay Thai clinch and then she swung him around. One thing I recommend people doing is when you know there's going to be some kind of a cheat or switch, if your performers are performing and they're going to continue to perform, come up with choreography that would allow them to keep going with that switch. As I was saying, the beginning of the sequence has Maze and Lucifer, and she's wailing on him, and then she gets him into a Muay Thai clinch, and then she swings him around. As opposed to she's wailing on him, then the camera goes off of him. Now they have to wait and time everything perfectly to reposition themselves. That's very, very dangerous. Timing is so dangerous, and it's so scary when you're doing these shots that involve a lot of things to work and happen at the same time.
Right.
So create a sequence for that. I always like to know what the beginning, middle, and end is. Unless there's a moment in the script where there's a cutaway, I will not cut away from the action. I will make sure that there's one flow. I'm gonna transition into Penny Dreadful real quick. We had two 50-man fights in that show.
Mm-hmm.
The first was a 50-man with like 100 background. Second one was a 50-man with like 300 background. When we designed that, Mark Norby, who was a stunt coordinator, and then Brian Duffy, the assistant stunt coordinator, we knew we had moments to fill in because they were on storyboard, but we talked about it, and I let them know that it would be best if we created a story from beginning to end. So God forbid the directors are like, I want everything in one master take. We knew what was going on. We knew what the story of the action sequence was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works a lot better than just giving pieces to the performers like, okay, over here, this is going to be this. Over here, it's going to be this. No, no, no. Let's just have the story moment going. So that way it's like, hey, this is story section one, story section two, story section three. God forbid we have to do it. We just do one, two, and three in order. Or if we have to, we'll do section three. Then we have section two. But everyone knows where the game plan is from A to B. I think the worst thing you can do with a performer and your actor is mixing things up so much they don't know where they're at. As far as the choreography goes. And that was something super duper important with the mid-season finale of Lucifer. Again, knowing where my doubles are going to be, knowing when I'm going to be putting all the actors in. And we also did kind of a similar shot towards the end. Amenadiel is taking on Lucifer. No, sorry. He's taking on Michael and Maze.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Amenadiel walks over. He grabs Maze, turns her around, and gives her a palm strike to the gut. Same thing. We had Tom being Lucifer. But we had our Michael double for the season, Aaron Farrington, be Michael. It was like a whole juggling act and a nice big game of chess. Mm-hmm. But the way we prepped it was we had the previs, and this is something, the formula that I'm going to talk about is something that our first AD, who's now a director of the show, Lisa Demain, came up with season three. We print out screenshots from the previs, like the big points.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it on the store, on a big poster board. And then we have our moments like actor, 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 double, and then double actor.
Mm.
So we know how to save time and how to go about the process accordingly.
Okay.
We know which sections we have left. I did it for myself as well when I did the second unit on season four of Lucifer, except I had everything out on pages. I printed it all on pages. The director at the time, Eagle Eagleson, he said to also give him a printout of where I'm planning to set up the camera angles. Now, God bless his soul, he never looked at any of the paper work or any of the pages that I printed out. Nothing. But because I did all that work, I knew everything inside and out.
Right.
Right? I knew it like I know my right hand. Like I knew it in and out, right? For the adults out there listening. And as I went throughout the day, I would just check things off. And then when we were short on time, day number two, and I had to take out sequences, no problem. I just X'd out the sequences and I knew what else I had to go with. Now, I don't need to do that because by the time we're shooting the sequence, I have to know it in and out. That's my job, right? When I go to work. It's stunt work. It's not stunt school.
Mm-hmm.
Something I learned from J.J. Perry. The problem is we got a lot of people going into work and they're not qualified for the job. So if you're listening, don't apply for a job you're not qualified for. Be good at it first, right? Mm-hmm. So all those years of filmmaking gave me the experience to know what it is that I'm doing. But having that visual representation in your hand or on a wide white cardboard, that helps. And it's just like, it's one of those like a extra safety type of things. As if you had someone by you like, hey, did you get this? Yes, I got this. Like when my wife and I leave with the baby, you know, it's just an extra person to confirm. Did you get her water? Did you get her milk? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you get her toys? Did you get this? So that storyboard from the previs is a visual reminder.
Mm.
Just in case.
Great comparison.
Just in case. Yeah. Again, I like problem solving. And when I found out that I had these two characters played by the same person, you know, my head went to work without all the smoking, just because it was fun and exciting and new. And I wanted to get it done. And I think everyone kicked ass. Everyone did an amazing job. They might have just taken out two or three shots from the previous.
Uh-huh.
We did change some of the choreography bits in version two, which I haven't uploaded. And I don't think it's necessary. But yeah, it was a challenge, but we got it done. That mid-season finale, I was told that I would have 2 days to film it, which was great.
Wow.
And I had 2 days to prep it because the bigger fights on TV, hopefully, you know, everyone out there gets like 2 days.
Mm.
Usually we get 1 day like that. Lucifer against Michael fight, that was 1 day of shooting. And then I got notes, which is a beautiful thing. And we went ahead and had a second day and redid everything that we needed to redo in 5 hours. And the reason I say notes are a beautiful thing, now some people be like, notes, they don't know anything. No. You get challenged, right? You get challenged. If someone tells you to do something, it's a challenge for you. It shouldn't ever be like, oh, that was an easy day, whatever. I made $1,000. It was super easy. That's great. But if you didn't challenge yourself, you're not learning and you're not getting better. So with these notes, I think the notes help bring out the scene the way it was intended to, right? Because, for example, like Michael versus Lucifer, I had a couple of moments where Lucifer looked like he was intentionally trying to hurt Michael.
Mm.
And it wasn't supposed to be like that. Like you watch the sequence, Lucifer like slams the piano top on Michael. And then he thinks it's over. And then Michael rushes in and throws Lucifer. That was a note given to me by the writer, the director, and the showrunner. So there are certain ideas that you have when you're designing action sequences. But the people that come up with the story or the people that are going to direct the story a certain way, I love it when they give me notes so that way I can make it as perfect to their vision as I can. Because that also opens up my thought process of how to design an action sequence. Mm-hmm. And then it opens up my ability to be open to the ideas of being open. You know, like if you're closed off, if you're one of those people that's like, it's either my way or the highway, that's cool, but I don't know how much growing you're going to get.
Right.
So that's why I always encourage everyone to stay open-minded with anything and everything, you know, just in life in general. some truths might not be so easy to grasp, but hey, have an open mind and think about it. Just right. like with what I'm talking about here. If they don't like your sequence, cool. Ask specific questions. Ask them what they want, what they like, what they didn't like, and make it the best version that you can. And hopefully it'll open up your eyes and let you know that, hey, there's not just one way of representing an idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always your way.
Right, right. Like what we were talking about before, about being open collaboratively and maybe pocketing one idea for later on or for a different placement in the fight sequence. And we also talked about before seeing female representation in great action scenes. Of course, here you have Maze throughout the series kicking ass left and right, and you have that dual karambit choice of weapon for her. Where did that come from? Because it's a pretty badass choice, in my opinion. And we also talked about before seeing female representation in great action scenes. Of course, here you have Maze throughout the series kicking ass left and right, and you have that dual karambit choice of weapon for her. Where did that come from? Because it's a pretty badass choice, in my opinion.
Well, that came from the writers. That came from season 1 and 2. The show, it takes place in Los Angeles, but the first couple of seasons were shot in Canada. And my understanding is there was a team, an action team dedicated to the show where training was involved.
Okay.
And that was by the gentleman, his name is Dan Rizzuto. So he was the coordinator on the show for the first couple of episodes. So when I came on board, you know, I did my research. I checked out the action sequences and learned everything I needed to learn.
Mm.
But yes, Leslie Ann, who plays Maze on the show, she wants to really use her karambits. The thing with choreography myself, as I had mentioned earlier, I believe in basics, and I believe that basics can make things look good. Now, I know karambits can be used in a much more violent and deadlier way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'll say is so far, so up to the episode 8 of the midseason of season 5, the show hasn't really given us an opportunity to slice and dice people.
Right, right.
Now, I don't know. There may or may not be something in the future where they're used a little bit differently. But again, for time purposes, right, and for reaction purposes, when I see like karambit drills, when I see knife drills, and you see people practicing drills, that's what they are to me. They're drills. When you're talking about choreography, there's so much more at play. There's reactions. There's selling things. You know, there's also movement. So it's funny. I just had this conversation with Micah Carnes. And I said, when you get into choreography such as trapping, if you have multiple cameras on the day, trapping style choreography can be very dangerous because the editors like to edit all the footage, meaning just about any angle they get, they want to put in there. And when you have trapping sequences, they might cut away from a very important moment.
Right, right.
From a very important trapping moment. Same thing goes back to the karambits. You know, there's X amount of flash that I wanted to show because I knew we had multiple camera angles going. In a sense, you could say that I forced my choreography onto the final product because I didn't have too many moves. Like, you know, I'd rather have 2 big beats as opposed to 5 little quick beats. Because I know those beats, if they're edited, even if they're edited, they're going to sell as those big beats. I've seen shows where there's a lot of quick hand choreography, and from like 5-6 moves, it went down to like 2. And it looked like it was the same thing over and over, and it bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like kind of just being careful with what it is that you have to play and how you play with it. But the karambits were great. Anytime that we did get to utilize them, and so far I think the midseason finale, we got to have the most fun with them because we got to spin them around, you know, give it a little bit more flair than usual. But again, limited with the amount of choreography, knowing that this is a long sequence, there are other parts involved, and we have to keep progressing through the story. I think the reason the midseason finale worked is because I limited the amount of action there was in between the dialogue, in between the story beats.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like no more than like 3 moves per sequence. So that way we can get into the story beats of it all, and the writers and the producers and the directors didn't feel like, oh, you know what, this is just one big action sequence, I'm not following the story.
Right.
You don't want to do that, especially if dialogue's involved. You don't want to take the attention of what's happening altogether, like the scale of the scene. And if there's too much choreography, that's going to take away. Everything needs to complement everything. You know, a lot of people, like with God coming down at the end,
mm-hmm.
that complements the action sequence, that complements the intensity and the violence. And with a sequence like that, it's like, okay, we have to show that Maze is trying to hurt Lucifer. Lucifer is trying to defend himself and not hurt Maze until he's had enough, you know, and he strikes her and it's like, hey, get away, that's enough. And I wanted to show the interaction amongst all the characters, especially Lucifer and Michael. Even though we did that previously, I wanted to show it again. Like, I didn't want to leave it as a one-on-one between just Michael and the men of you.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it'd be great to have Michael fight Lucifer and the Menadiel, like three brothers fighting each other, but also a two-on-one at the same time. All these little elements, but they help with the story. They help drive the story beats with it all. And then just, you know, going back to combats, yes, I love it. I love that there was a weapon involved, but the most amount we were able to do was episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully audiences will get to see more.
Hopefully. We will see. Who knows? Who knows?
We will see.
Fighter, are you ready? Fighter, are you ready? Let's fight!
I was thinking about going to that film. I know we touched upon it before, Brothers. I was just kind of wondering what it was like, I guess, adapting to the Masala style.
The beautiful thing about Brothers is we took out all the Masala. When we were prepping the movie, you know, we were told that it's a Warriors remake. So we're like, great, MMA. So the action was very specific. It was realistic action. It was MMA-based action sequences designed by so many of us because it went through so many stages from LA to India. Honestly, it wasn't as crazy as I thought it could be because we had performers coming in that, for the most part, were pretty damn big performers.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Swanberg had a fight, an amazing fight with Akshay Kumar. You know, Ron's been performing. Chan Griffin, he was the shorter, faster fighter against Akshay Kumar. All of these guys, the bigger fights against the lead Akshay, we had people come in that have had experience. So it was definitely a lot easier. And Akshay, I mean, that gentleman was in the best shape of his life, period.
Mm-hmm.
The best shape of his life. And he was getting trained every Sunday by us. And his training originally began in Abu Dhabi with Eric Brown. So a lot of time and energy and practice went in. And I think the reason the movie worked from an action standpoint visually is because there was time put into the actor's training. Mm. Even Sid, the guy playing the younger brother, we trained him. Justin, you began training him while Eric was training Akshay Kumar. So that's a very important thing to note. You know, going into India, a second time when I worked on Sultan, the actor told us, he says, listen, we do things differently. I go on set, I ask them what the choreography is, and I do it. And here we were having the guy train for a course of like 2.5 months.
Wow. Yeah,
and so it's crazy.
It's really all about prep. So knowing that there was someone training the actors was definitely a sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were times when we had to bring in some local people. That was challenging, to say the least. But the beautiful thing was that the director, Kata Mahotra, told me, he says, we are not moving on until you're happy, which was great. Mm-hmm. Which meant, like, we don't move on to the next take until I'm happy with this take. Because
mm-hmm.
I was also editing all the action sequences. It was quite the experience in that sense. And I was very glad to know that there really weren't any Masala moments, except you could say for one, where mm-hmm. there's this big gentleman by the name of Conan Stevens. He kicks an Indian fighter and the guy goes flying against the cage. So honestly, it wasn't a bad experience in that sense. It was definitely different. It was a whole different work experience.
Right.
That I wasn't used to. Now I look back on it, I'm like, oh man, of course I would have run the show a little bit differently. But I'm glad that I ran the way it did. It was, you know, I learned a lot. That was the first show where I really started to think about displaying choreography or sequences to try and educate the audience member.
Because
I had mentioned earlier when we were prepping this movie, the director told me, he says, listen, our audience members, they don't know what this stuff is. So we need to educate them.
Right.
We had the time to educate our actors and, you know, educate the rest of the talent and prepare them for what needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, it was just a matter of like, hey, we got to do it again. It's, you know, it missed here, or it needs more intensity or energy here. But I don't think we did more than like maybe 7 to 9 takes, which is great, which is great. Because also, you know, being the action director, I would also have the edit going in my head, which was nice.
Right. And
so as we're shooting, it's like, even though I'm setting up 3 different camera angles, I'm already piecing it together because I know what's going to work and what's not going to work. And at the time, it's like, great, I get an opportunity to set up 3 cameras.
Mm.
I've had opportunities to set up 2, but never 3.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a beautiful working experience in that sense. And as far as Masala goes, we were fine. We were fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll take that back. We did prep the final fight for a movie called Bahubali 2.
Mm-hmm.
And right. That movie, yeah. That's like the 300 of India.
Yeah.
That's a Masala movie.
Oh, yeah.
But the sequences that we came up with, there wasn't any Masala in that. Because we were also very limited to the kind of equipment and gear we had.
Mm-hmm.
We prepped that fight over the course of 2 days while working in India on another project. And I know, for example, like Brad Allen's team of Chris Cohen, Jimmy Choo, and Brendan, they did their version and they had like 3 weeks to do that. And then over there, you know, they were able to go ahead and get all the rigs set up and implement wire work and a lot more VFX. But other than that, I've seen the Masala movies. I've never been an actual part of them. I don't know. So some of those sequences scare me. Like when those guys bounce off the ground, yeah. I'm like, oh man. Oh man. Cause in my head, I'm just thinking adjustments.
Yeah.
And let's just say India works differently, you know?
Right.
Okay. You also worked on Sultan, right?
Yes. So Sultan, I was the assistant coordinator. That was the next MMA movie. And that's the movie where I talked about the actor telling us, hey, I usually go on set, they tell me what to do. And here I am training for 2.5 months.
Right.
That was definitely a lot easier for me because Larnell Stovall was the action director, you know, so I got a chance to quote unquote relax a little bit, but I was still piecing all the action sequences together. We were making sure that the previs was being followed. And then there were times where I would step in and I would just kind of like take over because Larnell had to take care of something else for production.
Mm-hmm.
But again, another beautiful experience. There was no Masala involved. Yeah. It was all MMA based fighting. We got to work with a lot of cool people, Tyron Woodley, yes. Marco Zaror, Maurice Grum. You know, again, we brought in people that would be comfortable performing in front of the screen, which made our lives a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
If you do your homework, people will like you. You know, like if I'm going to hire someone and I ask them to do something and they know how to do it, I'm going to like them.
Yeah.
Because it tells me like, hey, you know how to do this because you did your homework, because you invested the time in it. Going back to Sultan and, you know, even Brothers, I think our Indian actors did an amazing job, and they did an amazing job because of the time spent and involved prepping them and getting them ready for what was to come.
Right.
You know, because for example, Akshay Kumar, he understood like we got to do it until we get it done. And we had heard stories of Salman Khan, who's the Tom Cruise of India. He's like the biggest superstar, right?
Yes.
It's like, hey, he's only going to give you 3 takes or this or that. And sure enough, we're like, hey, Salman Khan, sir, you got to do take number 8. And he did it. I mean, like, we worked him. We worked him. And you know it's going to be a good product, you know, if you have someone like us, like myself, Larnell, you know, like a solid team that understands how everything's going to look, working you because we're just trying to get you to that level where you shine the most.
Right, making them look good, yeah.
Yeah, and that's honestly very difficult to do with people that have never had the practice. You know, like Salman Khan, yes, he's done a bunch of action movies. Akshay Kumar also done a bunch of action movies, but they've never done our style of action.
Mm-hmm.
They've never done MMA.
So different, yeah.
You know, and that's something that we want to relay, especially to productions that are overseas. It's like when we come, the reason we want to edit our action, the reason we want to do it our way is because, you know, it's coming from us. If you want to do it your way, hire your people.
Mm.
That's all there is to it. But obviously, there's been a bigger influence in the Indian market from the West because India has been so used to doing their style of action that these new things, they're learning as more Westerners go abroad and work on their shows.
Right.
And were you also editing for those projects?
Yes.
And
so our Brothers, I would be in front of camera and action directing for about 8 hours, and then I'd run upstairs and edit for 4. On Sultan, it was a little bit easier. I had my own tent on set.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in front of the camera, there was an action director, the workload was less, and it was a lot easier to juggle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Whether it's like, hey, come on in and help the person in the ring figure this out, or it's like, hey, how's the edit looking from yesterday? We were able to stay on top of things.
Was it at all different from editing you would do on those big projects here, stateside?
Well, in the States, to be honest, it's very difficult to get a hold of footage and edit any of it. Usually, if you're a second unit director, you might try to get that worked into your contract. Not saying that you get the final edit, but you get to make a pass at the edit. That's the thing. Okay. You get to make a pass. So with Lucifer, the second fight that I did, I was asked by the director, Claudia, who's an amazing director, and we worked together like 5-6 times since then on Lucifer, to come in and just take a look at the fight, which was very humbling. Because, you know, she's a director. She doesn't need to have me come over and take a look.
Yeah.
But she understood that it was my vision as well. So I walked in there and I saw the fight and I was, for the most part, happy. I knew where I was. I was in TV land.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what TV land is capable of. So you have to be extremely diplomatic when you go and you talk to editors.
Mm.
Because you have to ask them for things. You can't tell them. And you have to let them know that, hey, listen, this is, I understand, this is where you shine. Your creativity shines. You're the editor. And what I would try to do is I'd try to ask for 2 to 3 changes at most.
Yeah.
So that way I'm not trying to take away anything. So those changes that I'm asking for, those are some pretty important changes. Same thing happened on the season finale, season 4, the one that I did second unit on. Now, we ran out of time. And because we ran out of time, I couldn't shoot this big connecting piece that connected all the choreography.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went into the edit room, it was all shuffled around. And deep down inside, I was like, no. But I sat down with the editor for 1.5 hours. And we made the changes accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the final product, it was kind of in between what I had the editor do and the original edit that I saw. And this was because, for some reason, my previous didn't get to the editor. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So right there and then, you know, like thinking back, I'm like, okay, well, I spent 1.5 hours with the person. If I had spent maybe 15 minutes, if at all possible, maybe it would have looked more like the vision I had created from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But in either case, it worked and it taught me a lesson. It taught me how to give production the bare necessities to keep the story going without being able to intercut into other moments of the choreography.
Right.
I mean, and then going back to what I said towards the beginning of the podcast, Iron Fist season 1, God knows what those editors did. For anyone that's going to be an editor, or if there's an editor listening, I ask you with my hands pressed together in the most sincere way, just because you have 2 camera angles doesn't mean you have to use both cameras.
You don't have to use everything.
The mid-season finale, my editor was amazing because I think I asked him for a decent amount of changes. And that was also with the director there, Kevin Alejandro. And he was all up for it. He's all like, I love seeing longer takes. I'm like, yes, because these actors had worked so hard
for
it. And I kind of restricted the amount of shots, extra shots that we did with doubles and things like that on the day. I'm like, listen, our performers worked their ass off. I'm going to put the performers in first and I'll put in the doubles if I feel like we need anything. And sure enough, you see Leslie Ann doing the knee spin. You see DB Woodside as a Menadiel doing a one-er with a Michael double, you know, which takes him up into the air and slamming the guy back down. Because
mm-hmm.
that was cut up into like 2-3 shots. But seeing it all in one, it's kind of like a thank you to the performers and a thank you to the action team. That's what I take it as. Now, I'm not saying always go ahead and just play out the bit. If it looks weak, it looks weak. But if the performers look strong in that single take, then just let it play out. So that's a big difference between working here in the States and working overseas. There's something called an action director, which I've been referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And over here in the States, I refer to as a second unit director because that's the way it's categorized. And unfortunately, as a second unit director, you're not always doing action. It could be like, hey, go pick up these shots of kids skateboarding down the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be the most unexciting thing, but you're the second unit director. You got to pick up those shots and you got to make sure that it works and it looks good. Asia, overseas, when you say action director, that's a well-respected term, and I think that comes from China, all thanks to people like, you know, Sammo Hung, Jackie Chan, Ping, Corey Ewan, because when the action director comes on, just like in India, everyone quiets down, right? The director steps aside and the action director takes over. Camera angles and everything. Now with me, I don't want to come off as a jackass in any way, and I want to collaborate with my director. Right. I tell them, I'm going to do this. If there's anything you feel we need to change or modify, you have to let me know. Mm-hmm. This is your show. I'm just helping in this moment. And that's what we also did on Lucifer. On the mid-season finale, Kevin Alejandro told me, he said, I haven't directed action. I want you to direct this bit. And I said, absolutely. But you're going to be next to me. And Chris Rafferty, who was the writer on episode 8, is going to be next to me. And if there's anything you guys don't like, or if there's any kind of comment you need to make, any change, you guys have to let me know. Because Chris, you wrote this, and Kevin, you're directing this. I'm helping. Like, my role as an action director, you know, I stepped forward and I ran the show.
Right.
I said when we would move on, I dictated camera angles, all these things, the performers and all that. And we shot our performers out, you know, within 7 minutes, which was amazing. But that doesn't always come with the title you're given here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas opposed, like overseas, you're the action director, period. You know, but out of respect, I want to work with everyone because I want to get into their heads so that way we make the best possible product. I don't want a fight sequence to feel like it stands out from the rest of the show or it doesn't belong in the show.
Mm.
You know, so my job right now is to coordinate fights, design action sequences, and action direct if you ask me to, or second unit direct. But I'm always going to go ahead and make sure that this is all okay with the writer, with the production team, with the director, because at the end of the day, you know, their names go up there before mine.
Yeah. And I think in this segment here, we kind of wanted to jump into Unlucky Stars just a little bit.
What is that, a stick?
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
I'm going to be giving you some very negative reviews online, pal.
I had a question. Did you own suspenders already, or did you get a pair specifically for that one scene with, with Hargrave?
The suspenders, I don't know if I owned them or if Dennis brought them over, but I did have suspenders since 2004. I shot a fight scene with Sean Charney where I'm fighting in suspenders in Chinatown.
Mm.
But as far as the suspenders go, originally I didn't want to do a fight scene at all.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want a finale fight. And I kept telling Dennis, yo, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. And he convinced me to do it. So Sam Harder than I thought the second time. I told Dennis, we talked about it. Because we're referencing so much Hong Kong cinema, and I'm the big boy, and Sam is a good-looking bad guy, right? It's like, hey, let's get Sammo versus Norton from Twinkle, Twinkle, Lucky Stars. Because you listen to Dennis talk about this in the behind-the-scenes, or any interviews he does, he'll reference Twinkle, Twinkle, Lucky Stars
right.
as a primary movie that he kind of pulled sources from to make Unlucky Stars. So one of the biggest homages was the Sammo Hung versus Richard Norton. And the most memorable Sammo Hung versus Richard Norton fight is, of course, Twinkle, Twinkle, Lucky Stars. So we wanted to pay homage to the wardrobe as well.
Mm.
And that's how the suspenders came into play. Now, the one thing, though, is we shot that, I think, I can't remember what we shot first and what we shot last. But I was telling Dennis, I'm like, Dennis, my character doesn't wear suspenders throughout the entire movie. We don't see suspenders.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to make this happen? Sure enough. You know, the tennis racket, you know, the suspenders, and me not wearing a belt. And there's also that little nod when you see me grabbing the suspenders with that tennis racket there to a Twinkle Twinkle because Sammo Hung fights with tennis rackets against Yusuke Karada. But then we're like, that would be too much, and that would be like forcing it. To pay tribute to Sammo, we just knew that once I gave Dennis the okay that I'm going to go ahead and fight in the finale, I think it was just kind of like instinctive. We already knew what everyone would have to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you said, sort of having the big boys in the fight scenes, you sort of taunt Sam at one point. You're patting your tummy. You also have maybe halfway through the film, you have big boy. You have Troy coming up, throwing this spinning hook kick, knocking bottles all over the place, breaking things in the house. Was that always a goal that you guys had in mind? Is that theme of subverting appearances and showing your larger characters being mobile and being able to throw these kicks and things like that?
That's something that Dennis was relaying to me from the very beginning with my character. Because, you know, everyone looks at me and they're like, you're a big boy. But then it's like, Vlad, man, you know, you're good. People need to know you're good. You can throw kicks, you can throw that, you're good. Mm-hmm. It was Dennis also building up confidence And that was a theme from the very beginning, to show that size doesn't matter with what it is that you're trying to achieve. Big people are very talented and unique in their own ways. As far as Troy throwing that spinning hook kick, I remember hearing about Troy. It's like, hey, there's this 300-pound guy that can jump up and clap his feet to your head. I was like, holy shit. And then I met Troy, and he and I did a fight scene. I don't know if it'll ever get released. But the idea with Unlucky Star is Dennis wanted to put everyone in that he knew. Having Troy in there was just kind of like an extra special nod to the big boys of martial arts cinema. And we knew that Troy was talented. He could bust out some crazy moves like that spinning heel kick. Just to go back to the finale, Sam Hargrave was the one that decided to add those lines. Like, hey, not bad for a fat guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's great. I'm all like, you know, we can.
So those are all improv. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all improv. So talked about it and I said, let's speed it up. You know, let's say, have you say that line up, throw a kick. And then when you say the second line, you get popped in the face and it worked. And then towards the end, you know, when he does that 3-quarter back fall into the stairs right before I throw him into the big container.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his line. I thought that was fun because it's like just kind of reminding the audiences like, hey, big boy, but look at this big boy taking out this bad guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you know, earlier also in the middle of the movie, in the scene where I play Seti's stun double and I do that fight, I look at myself in the mirror and I suck at my stomach and I lift up my chest.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the reality is, you know, like big boys, we do think about like what it would be like, you know, if we were not such big boys. But at the same time, that's also what gives it the uniqueness. If he was like 185 pounds, six packs, and you threw that spinning hook kick, no one would care. If I was, you know, like right now I'm about 225 pounds. If I was 195 pounds of muscles, I'd just be another beautiful, you know, white guy in the stunt industry.
Yeah.
But instead, I could be a big, beautiful stunt guy in the industry. When you start playing with things like sizes, especially going back to practicing the craft, someone like Troy, someone like myself, we've been training with this heavy weight our entire lives. When you see us perform, there's something magical about it because, number one, you're not expecting it. And number two, it's a different kind of a character altogether. We see thin guys fighting all the time, even in the indie world. You see it, right? Tall guys, short guys, you know. But when you see a big boy fight and he sells the fight, he sells the movement, the technique, the energy, everything, you're kind of glued to the screen. Because this is something new and unique.
Mesmerizing. Yep.
Going back to the first fight I did with Mickey Namey, same thing. You know, the response to that was amazing because this was something that hasn't been seen before. You know, you don't portray the female performers in such a way where they look so hard. Or big people, for example. You know, like when you see big boys, fat guys be the heroes.
Yeah.
Only really like in Kevin James movies. Or, you know, like when John Candy was around, like, you're very limited. Even Seth Rogen, he changes weights, but he's a comedian. Like, big boys have been affiliated with comedy. You know, go back to Kevin James and John Candy.
Oh, Seth yeah.
It's all comedy. So when you see a big boy perform and start fighting, and Kevin James also does this sometimes, you're like, oh, wow. Like,
definitely.
It just sucks you in because it's something you haven't seen before. I think it's great that Dennis played to that. I think the story is there. You know, it's like, hey, big guy, but magical big guy. Unicorn big guy.
Unicorn, you know? Big. That's, yeah. A t-shirt. That's a t-shirt right there. You need that, and then you need I Survived a Vlad Rimberg Shoot.
Oh, my God. The unicorn big guy and I Survived a Vlad. But for the unicorn big guy, I'm going to do a picture of me throwing a 12 o'clock sidekick.
I like that. I saw there's a photo of you. Maybe you use it a lot with that same like green zip-up hoodie that you had in the project.
That was my go-to hoodie. Actually, I gave that hoodie to Michael Laird to use in a project that's never been seen. I don't know if it'll ever be released. In the indie world, I was kind of limited to the wardrobe I had. It was like, hey, whatever anyone has, bring it out. Nowadays, it's like, okay, if the person's working, I'll tell them to go ahead and invest and buy the wardrobe. If they're having a hard time, I'll go with them to the store and I'll buy all the wardrobe for them. At the end of the day, it's an investment.
Hey,
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram at Action Filmmaking Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.